Welcome into a Monday Scramble special podcast. I'm Will Gray, joined by GolfChannel.com senior writers Ryan Lavner, Rex Hoggard, and Randy Mell. This is part two of two, as they say in the business. We're talking the GolfChannel.com newsmakers of 2016. Last time we broke it down 10 to 6, talked about the stories and possibly some that got left out and how we put together the list. Now we're focusing on the meat. We're talking about 5 to 1 and what was the biggest story of the year for 2016. So let's just go macro. So again, 10 through 6 went Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods, USGA, the Sunday final round at Royal Troon, and the Ryder Cup. So now we're going 5 to 1, starting with Dustin Johnson, your US Open winner at 5, the Jordan Spieth Masters meltdown at 4, President-elect Donald Trump at 3, the Rio Olympics at 2, and then Arnold Palmer as the top story of 2016 as voted by us. And as we said before, we put together about 20 or 25 finalists. We all kind of throw in our ballots. And this is the list that we came up with. So, Lab, as we focus on 5 to 1, what stands out to you the most?
Personally, I voted Spieth Masters meltdown a little bit higher.
Me too.
I felt like that was a storyline that really resonated for the entire year and kind of dictated where Spieth went for the following months. During our 10 to 6 podcast, I think we were all in agreement that Ryder Cup probably should have been a little bit higher. So I put them on this list. But if we can just start at 5 with Dustin Johnson, I mean, what was the narrative about this guy heading into this year? He is supremely talented, longest hitter in the game. He just can't get his act together when it comes in golf.
It's the same. It's the same narrative for the last 4 years.
Right.
He's the best athlete on tour.
That's the narrative his entire career.
That has surrounded his entire career. He's won every single year on tour. The guy can't win the big one. And just when it looks like he's going to win the big one at the U.S. Open, all hell breaks loose. They try and take it away from him, and he still overcame that adversity. I thought Dustin Johnson really showed something this year in terms of what's inside of him, and he's a little bit tougher than I think we may have given him credit for.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, because we watched that whole thing through this this cloud of this fog of angst because of the USGA decision whether or not to tell him. And that, you know, really tested where his mind was at more than anything. I think, and that was so impressive the way he blocked that all out. And this is a guy that probably had a lot of demons rolling around in his head. He didn't need an extra one added like that. And, to win that way answered the question better than he possibly could have answered it.
He was almost the perfect person to have that situation happen to, too, because it, I think, what did he say in their press conference afterward? Just another one that you can add to the list, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you go through what happened at Whistling Straits and Pebble and Chambers Bay, and I mean, the list goes.
Well, all the things. Some of them self-inflicted, some of them otherwise. For it to add up and for this to be where, under these circumstances, it was perfectly apropos, considering everything that he had been through. And look, I did actually a feature on Dustin going into the championship talking about how quickly he got over Chambers Bay, how quickly he got over Whistling Straits, how quickly he got over Pebble and all these other setbacks. And a lot of people, including myself to a certain degree, had a hard time wrapping their minds around the idea that that was true.
Yeah.
That scar tissue has to build up. No one is made out of that.
You're a human. You're going to feel something.
Right. And it turns out that he's
not human.
Yeah, he does have short-term memory issues when it comes to competition, is what it seems to me. He's not going to let these things get him down. I will be very curious to see where he goes from here. We've seen athletes in the past. Dave Duval immediately comes to mind that once he got that first one, it was like an avalanche, not so much with majors, but with titles. And I think he certainly has the potential to do the same thing.
Yeah, that's the question with him is he going to be driven to do it long term? And how is he going to deal with everything that comes when you do get to number one and everything changes? You know, because he's not been under the radar, but Rory, Spieth, Day, they've taken the brunt of the media attention and everything that goes with that. And we've seen how it wears down players to be the number one player. So what happens when he does get there?
Yeah, I don't think he's wired to be that limelight-type character.
And we could be
wrong, but, I mean, he's got all the tools. If you're talking about a player who can be number one for the next 5 years, you look at Dustin Johnson. He improved his putting this year. His wedge game was a substantial upgrade. Obviously, what he's doing off the
tee. Not a substantial upgrade. That was an incredible
upgrade. His wedges were
That was the difference. You want to talk about how many 330-yard drives he hits. That's fine, but that has never changed. It was his ability from 75 to 130.
He became just, a top 10 wedge player.
He became a world-class wedge player.
The off-speed pitch. I mean, that's what he had been missing, and it's amazing how quickly he developed it.
Yeah. And then to follow it up, you know, winning at Bridgestone, continuing that momentum all through the year, player of the year.
Probably should have won the FedEx Cup.
As an aside, I was never a big fan of Oakmont as a major championship venue until this year. Like, I think this year...
What'd you have against Oakmont?
I just didn't think...
It's America's toughest course.
I mean, it's
America's toughest championship.
I just never saw the appeal until this year.
So once you saw it in a mud pit, then you said, yes, this is what I want?
I looked at the leaderboard. I looked at the way they were playing the course. I think, by and large, the USGA did a very good job of setting, again, the most difficult golf course in major championship golf up to be playable. There were actually some scores out there. Shane Lowry shoots 65 on Saturday. So I just really appreciate it for what it is. It just an aside.
Okay. Let's move on to number four. I would say Jordan Spieth was the biggest storyline coming into the year, coming off of that historic 2015 season. And, you know, Robert Frost, two roads diverged on the 12th tee for young Mr. Spieth. And just I can't wrap my head around just how different his year could have been. Just find the green, put it in the bunker, do something, and you've got back-to-back Masters wins. You've got untold confidence rolling into the rest of the year. But instead, Danny Willett is our Masters champion, and Spieth spent the next 6-7 months still trying to explain away his shot on 12.
And Danny Willett is not on our list.
Not on the list.
For a lot of reasons. I kind of respect what Jordan said in the aftermath of that, and it's just he didn't 100%. Have his swing that week. And look, it was a bad time. It's a hard hole. It had got him before.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot of guys, and I think that it's not so much the tee shot. We were talking about this last night.
It's the third.
It's laying side. Yeah, come on, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that kind of failure can just haunt a player for a long time. So for him to actually come back and have a pretty good year says a lot about the strength of his mind.
Yeah, I was down at Colonial when he won, and he was trying to play it coy, but you saw after he won just how big it was for him to get back and close something out, even just, you know, not on a major scale, but just any tournament. And then we saw throughout the year trying to get back to the majors, and next spring is going to be the first of 40 years when he has to go down Magnolia Lane and ask and answer questions about, you know, the 12th tee in 2016.
Right. They can say what they want about, you know, how it isn't really weighing them down, but until they prove it to themselves, get back in that situation and prove it to themselves, you know, it's there.
Yeah, I think we also learned something about Jordan this year as a player. That as talented as he is, very talented, and he does deserve to be in that top five, top six category. If his short game is off, even a little bit, he's going to struggle.
Yep.
And he's all that throughout.
He's just not a world-beating talent. And that's not a knock on Jordan Spieth, because there are very few players who can do that. But when you put Dustin Johnson against him, or Jason Day against him, or Rory against him, it's just
he has to be
absolutely perfect to beat them if they're at the top of their game. And I think, you know, to Spieth's credit, he'd been saying all week at the Masters that his swing wasn't where he wanted it. That wasn't just him making excuses afterward that he hit a poor shot. He had been saying that every single day, but his short game is what kept him in that tournament and kept him ahead of Rory. They faced off in the third round there, and I mean, he still played pretty good for not having his A game.
Yeah, I mean, Rory can win without his A game. Jason Day can win without his A game. Dustin can probably win without his A game. I don't know that Jordan can do that, not against a world-class field like this.
So, Lav, you were revealing your ballot a little bit earlier. I think I'll do the same. I think that Donald Trump is overrated at number three.
100%.
I would go, my top three storylines for the year would go Arnold Palmer, and then Olympics or Ryder Cup, depending on what order you want to put them in at 2-3. And I would drop Trump down to about 6. I understand we've got some recency bias. The guy's in the news every hour of the day this time of year. But in terms of impact on golf in 2016...
You want to recount? Is that what you're asking for with the Donald Trump?
We're not going down that road. Yes. But I just, you know, certainly there was impact, and he's going to be in the news for golf as well as politics. But at number 3, I'm not quite buying it.
Yeah, Randy, you're the one in charge of writing this.
Come on,
what do you got?
The president-elect, arguably the most powerful man on the planet, and we've never had someone like that who's so involved.
That's why he's going to be a big newsmaker in 2017.
Well,
in politics.
Why wouldn't he be for the same reason now, then?
Because it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, and we then had, you throw in the controversy.
You had the stuff at Doral, the tour leaves Doral, okay. You've got the USGA puts their head in the sand about Trump Bedminster, and then that gamble pays off with the election results and hosting the U.S. Women's Open there next year. I just didn't see him as captivating of a golf storyline as, say, the Ryder Cup.
Now, see, I don't think he should be at three either on this list, and we can sit and debate that. That being said, this goes back to what we talked about in the previous podcast. This is about how long that story lives.
Yes.
And let's be honest, this story has lived since the tour arrived at Doral.
Yep.
And look, I'll give Rory McIlroy credit. He was the smartest guy in the room once again when he was asked about the tour leaving Doral, and he thinks about it and he goes, let's think about it. At this time next year, he could be sitting in the White House, and wouldn't it be silly for golf not to have some sort of relationship with him? And that's kind of big picture. If you could think about the potential impact he has on golf, I certainly see why he deserves to be on this list.
All right. I'll buy that.
Yeah. Still. It was just a storyline that kind of simmered all year. There was never some kind of explosion like the Spieth meltdown or Dustin Johnson's.
We'll see if it blows up when the U.S. Women's Open goes to its course this next year.
2017.
Stay tuned for the 2017 newsmakers.
Same time, same channel.
PGA.
All right, so let's talk. The two biggest stories of the year, I think that it's pretty clear consensus. We have the unfortunate passing of Arnold Palmer, and we have the return of golf at the Rio Olympics. So certainly a bittersweet on one and a momentous occasion for the sport in number two. Randy, are you any thoughts on these in terms of something draw you to either one?
Yeah, I wasn't there like Rex, but I really had my doubts when it was first announced. I didn't like it. I didn't like the idea of golf being in the Olympics. I just thought it won't range as the most important achievement for a player to win that thing, to win a gold medal. But I was totally won over sitting on my couch watching that thing. It was riveting. You could see how important it was to the players, and it became infectious. Covering the women's game, seeing what happened to the women, and the scene that stands out to me, and Rex, you might have seen this, when the women left the medal stand, they were swarmed by photographers and cameramen and reporters like they never are. In women's majors, they never get that kind of almost pop star kind of reaction to them. So it just showed how big that was for the women and equally so for the men.
Well, and I think it was the tipping point, right? I mean, we talked about it for months, about all the things that were wrong. The golf course wasn't going to be ready. It wasn't safe. The Zika virus, the high profile withdrawals on the men's side, not the women's side. All of these things, I mean, it just sort of built. You had no idea what to expect when you got there, when you watched it on TV. And from day one when the men arrived, it was completely different than what anyone expected. It's Ricky hanging out with Michael Phelps and the rest of the USA swim team. It's all of the things about being in the athlete's village. It's all of a sudden, you're an Olympian. Like, of all people, Bubba Watson put it into perspective very, very quickly that, look, this is important to me. That this is going to be the only time in my life I'll be able to say that. I think the legacy that it left behind is very impressive. Following that will be the difficult part in my mind. Keeping the golf course relevant, making sure that the gains that golf received because golf is back in the Olympics, making sure you take advantage of those and the game continues to grow, because that's what this was all about from the very beginning.
Yeah, for sure. I think that when we're talking, we discussed this last time with the Ryder Cup, that you talk about staying power of a story. This was a 12-month story this year.
And it usually wasn't good news.
No.
Well, yeah, usually not.
But until the event, it really
wasn't. But even just the qualification run up of, is Jonathan Vegas going to slip in at 56, or is he going to get knocked out by Gaganjeet Buller or whatever? And
I don't remember that headline.
It was there. It was
huge.
Latest news.
It was a really
big
headline.
Latest news.
Colombia,
Venezuela. Moving on. But mm-hmm. I think Adam Scott withdrew in April. Does that sound about right? And so. For the next 4 months of every single player being asked, are you in, are you out, what's going on? That was a storyline that we saw really affect Jordan Spieth at the Open Championship. I mean, he was laboring over that press conference to announce his withdrawal and everything that followed.
I think we're all in agreement here that the Olympics could still be better. I think we need
it will be.
Component.
Sure.
I think
you think
every player's
the format's going to change.
I think the format's going to change. I mean, I won't guarantee it. The format's going to change. The infrastructure's going to be better. I mean, look, at Rio, it's the first time the Olympics have ever been played south of the equator. And there were always going to be challenges involved, and certainly we ran into those in golf and across all the different sports. If you consider Tokyo, already has a golf course in place. They already have all these things in place. It's going to be bigger. It's going to be more high profile. Sure. I think the format changes. I think we won't have those players.
Players are going
to
buy in
coming
now.
Up with an excuse not to go. And let's face it, this Zika virus was an excuse not to go.
Adam Scott still might not play.
Look, man, I give him credit. How smart does he look now? In retrospect, I got out in April. I was done, you know, for all these different reasons.
Yeah.
Opposed to what Rory has admitted since then that, look, I just kind of jumped on the bandwagon. I shouldn't have done it.
And Spieth recently also said he regrets his decision.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's at least one of those guys. You were talking about Bubba before. Spieth is going to have more opportunities to represent the U.S. in all likelihood. But, you know, it's only once every 4 years. You know, you never know how many bites at that apple you're going to get.
Yeah, I think 2020 is just going to be a completely different animal. Every player is going to buy in. Every player is going to be jockeying, maybe adding a couple starts, trying to make sure they're in a position to be on that team. If you can add a team component, I think that would maybe create some more drama. You're still just going to have a 60-player field where it's kind of, you know, top heavy.
And I don't know that, you know, again, being on site, you kind of get in that bubble. I don't know that the format was that bad. Like, I think specifically the men's competition was very compelling coming down the stretch.
I don't think we're having this discussion right now if Marcus Fraser wins.
No, we wouldn't be. Absolutely not. I mean, that was probably a worst case scenario.
And if MB Park does not win.
Yeah.
I think it becomes important to us because it's important to the players. When we didn't think it was important to the players, you know, it wasn't as important to us. That's changed.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we got to end this on a little bit of a somber note and just discuss the passing of Arnold Palmer. You know, the timing, it came hours after that dramatic win by Rory McIlroy of the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup. It didn't necessarily overshadow the Ryder Cup, but it was a storyline for basically the entire week of how that was going to impact the U.S. team. But we saw just the outpouring from players, from golfers, other sports people, politicians, you name it. Arnold Palmer transcended the game of golf. And we saw that in the days that followed his passing.
Yeah, listening to players call into the Golf Channel when the news was broke by Rich Lerner and the telecast started for like how many days? 9 days or whatever.
Yeah.
It was almost nonstop for the Golf Channel. But I'll always remember Fred Couples calling in. And that night was special because the later it went, into the night, the more big names started calling in.
It was like a telephone.
It was this great intimate feel where people started feeling more comfortable calling in. And when Couples called in and just broke down, that's on the air. That's a moment I won't forget.
You brought up Roy. I was at East Lake covering the Tour Championship. Obviously, Roy has a great Sunday. And it was in the middle of his press conference when we all started kind of getting the news and we're looking at each other. They didn't want us to ask him because obviously it wasn't confirmed at this point. Rory, they didn't want us to ask him during the press conference. So we all kind of scrum afterwards. And I just wrote about this because I went back and listened to the tape. We're telling Rory and the tour media official is telling him you don't have to comment now. Almost warning him that this is probably, let's hold off and not talk about it. And Rory wanted no part of it. It was very much Arnie-esque. It was, no, I want to talk about his legacy. And he sat there for 15 minutes. And just went on and on and telling stories of having lunch with Arnie. And you're right, across the board, every player had some sort of connection to him. It shows how truly special he was.
I thought there was a lot of great tributes at the Ryder Cup, at least until the competition actually began. And
the bag.
Things got a little...
The bag on the first team was
cantankerous. But yeah, the first 4 days, you know, all players, they're kind of reserved about it, and they're sharing their stories about what they like so much. I'll remember the service the Tuesday after the Ryder Cup.
The rainbow and the... Plainest
oh, the rainbow. That was, yes.
Our Mercer Baggs was there. The Sam Saunders eulogy was just
fantastic.
Tremendous. Yeah. If you haven't had a chance, Google that. Look it up on Golf Channel. It was just unbelievably touching, and things started to get a little dusty in the room for sure.
Yeah, I mean, this was what Mike McCarley, president of Golf Channel, said. It was a day that no one ever wanted to come, but it was a day that, you know, you kind of had to prepare for. And it's tough because he had such an imprint on Golf Channel as a whole as a co-founder. He was very active in the formation of the channel. None of us would be sitting here around a microphone if it weren't for Arnold Palmer. And I think that there's a lot of people that are related to and connected to golf that would say the same.
Has anyone ever been so relevant for so long in golf? The guy, when he was 82 years old, he was third on Golf Digest list of moneymakers behind Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. That's crazy, 82 years old. And he's on the cover of Golf Digest getting kissed by Kate Upton, right?
That's true.
At 82.
What a guy.
Still the king.
He is. He is. All right. Any parting shots? Any final objections?
I mean, we can pick this list over. My top 10 personally did not look like this, but hey, that's why we have a democracy. That's why we gave everyone a chance to vote.
Recount.
Yeah. There you go. But you know, we can all quibble with this a little bit. I would move the.
That's part of the fun.
The right.
Part of the fun is having a little bit of debate.
Right? I couldn't imagine sitting here a year ago. I mean, we all knew what the schedule was going to entail and how difficult this year was going to be for everyone in golf because of the travels and the condensed schedule and the Olympics and everything. The way it played out was even more fascinating. I mean, we knew it was going to be an eventful year, but that list shows how many things and the things that we left off the list.
Yeah. Yeah. And the year ending with Tiger Woods showing flashes that maybe he's not done and the promise for
yeah, that just gives everyone a little extra spark now as we go through the holidays and look forward to Torrey Pines or the desert or wherever he comes back in 17.
Before you know it, we'll be back here doing Newsmakers of 2017 and we'll be off and running. But for now, I think that we're going to get some rest while we can. For Ryan Lavner, Randall Mell, Rex Hoggard, I'm Will Gray. Thanks for tuning in to this Monday Scramble special podcast and we'll see you next time.